गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्तिभिः सेदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः सर्वोपनिषदो गावः दुग्धा गोपालनन्दनः पार्थो वत्ससुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं वात् So, last class we completed the ninth chapter. Ninth chapter again was similar to our seventh chapter, if you recall. And there, Krishna was talking about how he manifests everything, origin of everything, and talking about sakama nishkama bhakti was one of the main points there. And there's one very nice allegory they give, small story to show about the difference between these, where the attitude is important in bhakti more than what you do. Because in one of the most famous verses in the chapter, where Sri Krishna says, right, patram pushpam palam toyam, somebody offers just a leaf or a little water with devotion, that's enough. So there's the story that Arjuna is doing his big puja every morning, elaborate puja, doing it for a few hours, according to all the rules and regulations. And one day he's talking to Sri Krishna and he's a little bit arrogant that I'm doing this puja every day. I'm such a great devotee. This lazy brother of mine, Bhima, is snoring away. By the time he gets up, you know, so late in the day, and I did all this wonderful puja and all. So Sri Krishna says, very nice, I want to show you something. So he takes him somewhere and there he sees these truckloads of flowers arriving. He says, wow, whoever's brought all of this must be some really great devotee. He said, yes, these are the flowers that your brother Bhima offered to me this morning. I said, how? He's sleeping away. How's he offering? Well, every day when he wakes up, he offers all the flowers in the world to me. So then he understood that just the external expression isn't as important. Where it's coming from is the important thing. So that was an interesting story about this, which helps to show some of the difference in where the attitude in the puja is important. Now we're still in the second section of Gita from verse 7 to 12, so still discussing about the totality, about tatpada vichara, or about there's the jiva and there's Ishvara. Here about Ishvara, about the totality. So here, Sri Krishna is shifting also to discuss about the glories. Ishvara Vibhuti. And what happens is, when we discussed about the different types of bhakti, one way we broke it up is three different steps, if you want, which was Ekarupa Ishvara, and then Anekarupa Ishvara, and Arupa Ishvara. Ekarupa Ishvara, you have the one God in some form, and then the universe. So the God is the creator. God created the universe. So the God is sitting in some seventh heaven and has created this world. So this is one step. First step, because at least one recognizes there is something behind it all. And since we have an objective mind, which is used to objectifying things, the God is seen in this way as sort of an object, right? So that's the first. Then afterwards, the next step in the growth is Aneka Rupa Ishvara, where one sees God is in and through everything. So everything is a manifestation of God. So Aneka Rupa, numerous forms, because everything comes as the form of Ishvara, because Ishvara manifests everything. Otherwise, where did Ishvara go? If Ishvara is in the seventh heaven and not here, comes and visits here once in a time in order to, you know, you call the maintenance person because there's a problem. So yada yada hi dharmasya. Oh God, there's some problem here. The God will come and then we'll go back, right? They got come. This is the kind of prayer that people that have Ekarupa Ishvara, oh, there's a problem, God, please help me, right? Please help me, please protect me. As you see in many in prayers and in a lot of these series that you see, the Puranic series, Trahimam, Trahimam, Pahimam, Pahimam, right? Protect me, save me, like this. Then you can go back. People do the puja, they invoke the God in the deity. Please come. When they finish, then gacha gacha, you can go now. Finished. We'll invite you again when we want. But once it's, but then when one gets aneka rupa, meaning in and through everything. So everything you see is a manifestation of that. So that's the second level. Third level is arupa, formless. Meaning everything else can only be an appearance compared to the Ishvara itself. And of course, once you get to arupa, this is nirguna, no qualities, then it cannot be the other, because other is also a guna. It's also a quality, some sort of limitation. So once you come to nirguna, you can't have me and the God, because I and you are attributes. They're ideas, they're waves, they're not the substance. So the aneka rupa is going to be, the God is the ocean in which all the waves are present, manifested in through all the waves. Arupa is going to be water, because what happens is, what is wave water? What is ocean water? It's all water. So this is these three levels. So of course, as we're discussing here, we're discussing about the aneka rupa when talking about the glories of Ishvara, because there's no glory to Arupa Ishvara. The moment you give a glory to Arupa Ishvara, now you're giving a guna, right? You give it a guna, you give it some quality. So it's going to be for the madhyama, for the middle, this middle tier. And this middle tier is important because it helps as a stepping stone. Because right now, I'm dealing with multifarious, with many waves, many issues. But then I'm dealing with one thing. Everything is that Ishvara manifest. So it helps me to look beyond the manifestation. Because what happens, I see anything that is really wondrous. Wow, this person is really great. It can be that they're really great because they did something wonderful, great service, or they really worked hard and achieved something like this. And pretty soon, Krishna will exactly say this. Or it can be because they did something horrible. They're also very well, very, wow, how could somebody do something like that? How can somebody be like that? Right? So now I'm looking at that person and at what they did, and I'm in awe about that. But, and then I'm looking at the multiplicity. Oh, my friend is really good at this. They're a great singer. Wow, how could they do this? And this other fellow that I know, you know how hard he's worked at, and he's really clumsy. He can't get anything done, no matter how he works so much harder than anybody like this. I keep looking at the external manifestation. But if I see everything as the manifestation of Ishvara, instead of it bringing me to the plurality, it brings me back to the same thing, back to the same source. So this is where the glories are very helpful. Anything I see that catches my eye will remind me that where it's coming from, instead of looking at just the external manifestation. So this is one of the reasons why this is being pointed out. And another reason which goes hand in hand with this is that I worked hard at something, I'm really not very good at it. I label myself as somebody clumsy, or not very good at this thing. So I'm labeling myself as this, or something else I'm very good. Well, I can do this very well. Now that's going to build up my ego. Look how well I can chant. Look how well I can sing. Look how smart I am in this field. But then I'll say this is a manifestation of Ishvara. So then it diminishes the ego. And it's very important to diminish the ego, because what is ego? A self-identification with something. And the stronger that is, the more I'm separate from the whole, the harder for me to look beyond this in order to inquire. So the ego has to be reduced for me in order to inquire into this. I'm so great, and I'm going to look into the source of myself, so I'm going to know it like this. And I'm going to be so great, and I'm so great, I'll be even greater because of this. This is the ego. You know, the jnana means I have to look beyond ego, meaning the ego has to be thinned out. And of course, some ego has to be there in order to do anything, but the identification has to be minimal like this. So this is a little bit of the background of what's happening in this chapter. Let's start looking into Shri Krishna's teachings here. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Bhuya Eva Mahabaho Shrinu Me Paramam Vachaha Yatte Ham Priyamanaya Vakshyami Hita Kamyaya. The Lord said, O Arjuna, once again may you listen to my supreme words, which I, wishing your welfare, shall tell you who are delighted. So here Shri Krishna starts this chapter. Arjuna didn't instigate it as other chapters. He wants to say some more in order to help enlighten Arjuna. And he's seeing that Arjuna's, he's starting to look a little different, obviously. He's saying, oh, that you are looking, priyamanaya, you are looking that you have welfare, who are delighted. You are already starting to look different. Before, you were very worried and very concerned and depressed, but now the teachers are starting to have some effect like this. This is what I found in having these types of classes. The greatest feeling you can have when teaching it is you see the difference. You can see that they're more concerned, worried, and you see how that has become less. They come and they seem more relaxed, more happy. Oh, you see it's doing something. So this is, when seeing this, it's gives the teacher also delight. Shri Krishna is very happy. It's doing something like this. Of course, Shri Krishna is Shri Krishna, Jnani. So if it didn't do anything, it's not going to disturb his equilibrium. But of course, if you do something worked well, then very nice. He's happy. He's happy that this is going where it's going. So I will tell you again, Bhuya Eva Mahabaho, because we keep looking into it. The scientist is not going to stop looking into it until they get to the bottom of what they're trying to find out. So here, as we look into it, we'll look at different angles, keep looking in until it's clear. There's no... why should one stop until you haven't cleared everything and gotten to the bottom of it? So I will tell you again, and listen to my paramam vachaha. Of course, paramam vachaha can be these great, very auspicious or very enlightening words, but here, of course, the highest, paramam vachaha, is talking about paramam, about the atma, about Brahman. Yateham priyamanaya vakshyami hitakamyaya, and it's for your own good. Because the thing is, he's doing it for Arjuna's good. Does Shri Krishna benefit anything from teaching this? How could he benefit? So same with the jnani. The jnani doesn't benefit from talking about these things. Jnani has nothing to benefit. What else does a jnani need? So the jnani, the mahatma, their teaching is purely of service, because they don't need anything in return. They're not going to gain anything, lose anything, because they have nothing to gain or lose. So in this way. Okay. So here also, hitakamyaya, for one's benefit. And what's the greatest benefit? Is going to be moksha. What is the greater benefit than this? Any other benefit is going to be useful, but it's not going to be the most useful. So this is what's important, okay? So he's going to teach about the glories, about Ishvara's glories, so that one can get inspired by this, one can think more of Ishvara, one can start seeing that Ishvara is what's behind everything instead of just seeing the externals, and then one can start the inquiry process. This is the Shri Krishna's why he's teaching this, why he's doing it. Because also here he's talking about Tatpada. Later it'll go to Asipada. Why? There's no difference. When it's no difference, then it has to be Nirguna. Because what happens is you have Ishvara and you have Jiva, right? Here Ishvara and Jiva, it's discussion Ishvara and Jiva, Arjuna Jiva, and Shri Krishna is the Ishvara. From the perspective of the essence of the consciousness, there's no difference, right? What's the difference between the water and the wave and the water and the ocean? Tell me the difference between them. The qualitative difference. I'll take a cup of water from the wave. I'll say, compare this to a cup of water from the ocean. You'll say, hey, that is a cup of water from the ocean. What are you talking about? No, I took it from the wave. But the thing is, the difference is in the upadhi. The upadhi is the difference. I'm this individual. As an individual, I'm limited. Right? The consciousness is reflecting something limited, as Ishvara reflected in the totality. So that's where the difference is. Not in the essence. But we're looking at the external manifestation, seeing the differences. So here, helping us to focus back to what is the essence behind it. That's the whole reasoning for everything. So first few verses, Shri Krishna is just preparing the ground for the chapter. So in the next verse, let's hear what he says. Name vidu suraganaha prabhavam namaharshayaha ahamadir hibdevanaham Maharshinam chasarvashaha. Neither the gods nor the great sages know my origin, because I am the origin of the gods and the great sages in all respects. How can the wave go and measure the depth of the ocean, where the ocean starts from? The wave wants to do it. How's it going to do it? Swami Premananji, he likes to tell this story. He says that a long time ago, the flies got together, because they're the different fly groups, right? And they said, we're not like these people that have all the wars. We want to do everything in a dharmic, proper way. So we want to measure the space. Once we measure the space, then we'll know how much space there is, and we'll divide it between us equally in a fair share. So they decided to do that way way early in the creation. So then they sent the younger flies to go and start measuring the space. Right? And when you see the flies fly, they fly like in a straight line, then change. Go other way, straight line, change. It's because they're measuring. And this is millions of years ago. They haven't finished their job yet. They're still measuring the space. So the fly wants to measure the space. How is the fly going to measure? Where does it start from? Like this. So in this way, no matter how great the being is, that's why saying the rishis, the devas, whatever greatest you can think of, the moment it's some limited being, how is it going to measure? How is it going to measure that? So if you take it from the perspective as aneka rupa Ishvara, everything is manifestation of Ishvara, there's no way for anything with the manifestation to measure, to get to the bottom, the beginning of Ishvara, where it starts from, what is it's fathomless because it's something limited within Ishvara. And then if you take it from the higher perspective, the Vedantic perspective, Arupa Ishvara, it's kind of like saying that the character in the movie wants to go and go to see where the light of the projector is coming from. How is the character in the movie going to do that? Character of the movie is a projection from the light. How can it go and affect the light itself? Say, I'm going to do some mischief. I'm going to block the light so nobody will see the rest of the movie. How can it do it? So nobody will see. How can it do it? It's a manifestation of that. The light is manifest. The other one is an appearance within the light. How can it affect the light? How can it go? I'm going to go and see where the light comes from. How can it do it? So this way, it's not possible. So as an individual, there's no way that I can go and get to the base of Ishvara. I can't know the totality. It's not possible. And actually, within Vedanta, we don't want to go and know, become a sarvajna of Ishvara, sarvajna in the way that I'm going to know every detail of everything as Ishvara. Because the thing is, I have a limited mind. Why is my mind limited? Because the base of it is avidya. There's the covering. The avarana shakti of maya is covering. And then because of that, there's the projecting power, and the projecting from something limited. So I see something limited around. I take myself as something limited. So I'm covered by that. So then I can only see the limited. So as an individual with this mind, how am I going to fathom the infinite? I'm alpagya. As an individual, alpagya, I can know very little. So I can never know, be an Ishvara seed, and be all-knowing in that way. But that's not our goal, because that still has to do with the upadhi. So once I negate the upadhi, there's no difference. As we said before, the upadhi is the difference. And upadhi, when we go into the Vedantic part, the upadhi is adhyasika, it's projected. Because I have a batch of ideas and I take them as a reality. I'm the awareness within those ideas come up. The moment I have some sort of limited, if I want to bring up any idea, any knowledge of something, then it's limited. As knowing this, the base of it, there's no difference. So we're never going to fathom Ishvara as the upadhi of Ishvara, but only the essence, which is same essence as mine, like this. So this, otherwise it's not possible, like this. Now what happens is, with us, when you go to deep sleep, we say the kosha you're identifying with is anandamaya kosha. Anandamaya because you feel ananda when you're asleep, right? In deep sleep. So nice, I slept so well. But we say it's malina sattva. Malina sattva meaning it's tamas sattva mix because there's ajnanam there. So the base for the jiva is this malina sattva because I am a conscious being. Knowing, so there's sattva there, but there's also the avidya there. So then the knowingness is there, but it's covered by some unclarity, right? So there's a limitation. For Ishvara, what would be equivalent to mind is maya, the whole maya shakti. But for Ishvara, the maya is the totality. So for Ishvara, there is no avidya. There's only pure sattva. If Ishvara had ajnanam, Ishvara would be limited too. And then Ishvara would be under Maya's spell. But Ishvara is not under Maya's spell. It's kind of like in the dream, you as the dream character are limited. You as the Ishvara of the dream, you're not limited because the whole dream came out of you. So you wake up, the whole dream was within me. All the characters, everything came out of me. I know everything to do with the dream. Everything is within me. Limited character in the dream feels I'm limited. I only know so much. So the upadhi of the one in the dream based on avidya and feeling limited. Then I wake up, I'm the same one, but from a different upadhi. The one within the whole dream was within me. And the one in the same. Same one is behind them. So in this big dream, then I'm this limited one because there's some avidya that my knowledge is limited. But there's Ishvara whose knowledge is behind everything, whose the whole thing is within him. And then when I wake up, I negate the limited idea, then we're one and the same. Okay? The character in the dream, as the character in the dream, still there's limitation, only knowing that limited part. So the character in the dream, the waking character, the upadis are different. The one in the dream never knows the totality. But once the difference is negated, it doesn't matter because it was a dream. One and the same. So like this, okay? So in any case, so the whole dream and everything, this whole dream world, the whole everything, the whole mitya world, the Ishvara will know. I don't need to know, right? I don't need to know everything. I can't know everything. And there's no need to know everything like that. Once you know the essence, it's as good as knowing everything. One of the Upanishads, I think it's the Mundaka, if I'm not mistaken. I think so, I could be wrong. But the question that came up there also was, the student asked, actually the teacher had asked the student in order to have them want to know, and they want to know what it is. Is there something, do you know that by which everything is known? Because the student was the son, he came back from Gurukulam, and he was very proud that he learned so many things. And so the father, who was the teacher in the Upanishad, in order to help him go overcome his arrogance and get to the essence, asked if he learned in the Gurukulam that by which everything is known. And then he got stunned. And then he wants to know what it is. So what happens is, by knowing the essence, it doesn't mean you know every little detail, but you know the essence of everything. Once you know essence of everything, you don't need the details. You already have everything like this. Because the details are within the essence, first of all. And secondly, once you know the essence, you know the details are apparent like that. So that's essentially what's being discussed. So, name viduhu suraganaha prabhavam namaharshayaha, all the devas, all the gods, and the rishis, all the saints, none of them know my beginning, can know my beginning. It doesn't work that way, right? Not possible. Aham adir hi devanam, because I'm the origin of the devas, maharshinam, and the maharshis. Sarvashaha, in every way. What do you mean by in every way? So what ways could there be? Nimitta upadana, like this. I am the material cause, upadana karanam. And I'm also the nimitta karanam, I'm the intelligent cause. But remember we said Ishvara, abhinna nimitta upadana karanam. The one cause, which is both the intelligent cause and the material cause of everything. If the God is just the intelligent cause, not the material cause, then again the God is a separate entity, separate, supercosmic God that goes and recreates the world. The world is something separate. Somehow gets the material, but the material isn't the God, material is separate. But here we're saying, no, the God manifests everything, so the God has to be both material and the intelligent cause, like you and your dream. You're the intelligent cause behind your dream, and you're also the material of the dream, right? Everything came from you. You didn't need anything from outside in order to create the dream, right? Free of cost. You didn't rely on anybody else, independent. So that's the sarvashaha. Both of these, right? The moment it's not both of these, meaning the God is limited, right? The God is limited, needs some material. And the material now is scarce, now the God's gonna be in trouble. Oh no, I need to create the world, but I can't afford the material because it's gotten too costly. Like that, I can't find it. Of course, theology will say, well, the God could do anything so if the God could do anything, manifested, meaning manifested from within himself, because if otherwise, where else is there? So that's why we say then the God is in and through everything, because the God is everything, is manifestation of that. So continues here, one more verse here for his introduction. Yo mama jamanadincha vetiloka maheshwaram asammudhasamartyeshu sarva papai pramuchyate. Among mortals, that discriminative one who knows me to be birthless, causeless, and the great Lord of the universe becomes freed from all sins. So also gives the, why do you want to know this? You want to be freed from sin, you want to be freed, meaning I suffer because of this. I'm limited because of this. Sarva papai means papa and punya, right? Because we said papa will chain you in rusty and heavy iron chains, and punya will chain you in very comfortable, beautiful, shiny golden chains. Right? Because punya still meaning I'm something limited. I'm something great, but still limited. And the punya will go soon, and then that's also gone. So that's why we're free from all of this. So of course, we'll say, I know the glories of Ishvara, so I'll be free. Well, you know the glories, meaning you know that Ishvara is behind it. So you know there's one behind everything. Then you take that and you inquire into and find the essence then. So it's not the direct thing. You mean I'm going to, if I get a good grade in chemistry, I'll be a doctor? Yes, you will be, but you have to finish the graduate work, go to medical school. That's a good preparation. So that's what it means. Whenever something else, some preparatory understanding or practice is given, that's going to take you to the essence, it means yes, with a few more steps. Okay. Otherwise, in the text, you'll find any little thing will take you to moksha, like that. So in this way. So, yaha mam ajam anadim. I am unborn and beginningless. So anadim, beginningless. So meaning that there's no cause for me. Something beginningless means something can't cause it. How can to have a cause? It has to come from something else. So there's no cause for. Since there's no cause for me, I'm not an effect. So anadim, beginningless, causeless, meaning that the Ishvara also is not an effect of something like this. That's why both ajam and anadim. Anadim, it's not an effect. There's no cause for it. So ajam, never born, meaning it can't be the effect of something. So Ishvara, you can't say that it's the anything, the causeless cause. Now, of course, when we say causeless cause, then you say, how can something be a causeless cause? So it has to be, as we say, the only way for it to be is, in the end, when we look into it, the only way it can happen is that the effect is mithya. If the effect was real, then I took milk and I boiled it, I added some starter, I left it in the warm place overnight, and I have wonderful yogurt, right? What happens is, at work, I would see these people, previous workplace, this group of Indian programmers there. They would all go and have lunch in the lunchroom, and I'd go sit there too. And then the newer ones who would come on board, they'd all be chatting away. They wouldn't know. And then suddenly when I would say something, because I understood their Hindi, they would be kind of surprised. They didn't know my background. But in any case, they would all bring yogurt from home. I said, very interesting. Then my current workplace, my coworker Priya, her daughter's like the home yogurt. Oh, very interesting. So I started making it. Oh, how wonderful. Like this. So home yogurt is always different. But in any case, so the yogurt, that's just total aside, there's nothing to do with. the yogurt is this. I'll tell you one thing, we'll come back to it. There's something called Volkswagen meditation. Volkswagen meditation, I'm sitting here. Om, 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 shiva, om, shiva. There's some noise on the road. Oh, yeah, that car. that sounds like a car. That doesn't sound like an electric car. Oh, I know the person up the block got a Volkswagen. It's probably Volkswagen. And these Volkswagen, they don't make them the way they used to. Because they used to make those nice old ones, those, but now they don't look the same. They're not as this. And you know, and Volkswagen was started in Germany in the Second World War. It's called Volkswagen, vehicle that all the people can use, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It takes you to who knows where. And in Germany now, you know, they have the elections. The Green Party is winning some places. That seems very nice. Green Party should have more power. Blah, blah, blah. That's Volkswagen meditation. So we talk about yogurt to show the example of cause-effect, and then it goes out to everything else. And that's the world. I am, and then I see something. Oh, is that mine? Not mine. I like this. I don't like this. I create my whole world, and then I blame the God for me. So my whole life was Volkswagen meditation. So in any case, so the yogurt is what we call parinama. You have milk. You do something, it changes into yogurt. You can't take it back to be milk anymore. It changed. Parinama. So if the God, if the world is real, the God becomes the world, how can the God unbecome now? The God is no more the God because God changed. No, no, he can wiggle out and go back. Okay, but meaning the God changed, so if the God changes back, the God is now samsari because changes, right? Oh, he doesn't mind the change. Meaning, the only way you can really be fully detached from the change is that you know the change is apparent. And if the change is real, it will have some effect on you. That's why, you know, it can't be, we say that, it can't be that way, right? So, that's why we say, no, the whole thing has to be an apparent creation, it has to be mitya. Otherwise, you have the God going through transformation. The God is changed. The moment it's changed, it's limited. And you get into all those troubles. Any case, we said, Yahamam ajam anadim. That's why not born. Born meaning coming into being. Meaning there's the moment you're born, meaning there's a change. That's why when in Vedanta we analyze the individual, we say, okay, you say individual, you have a physical body. Okay. Physical body means there's birth, there's a birth, there is growth, there is metamorphosis, the body goes through change, there is decay, there is death. No, 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 born but doesn't die, that doesn't work. The moment something is born, it'll die. You'll say, no, it doesn't die, so it wasn't born. If it was born, that means it's a package deal. Change means change, like this. So in any case, so this is what we're saying. Ajam anadim, no causeless cause, then meaning there's no, it's the cause beyond the, it's the cause which seems to change, cause for a seeming change, like this. You're the cause for the seeming dream, apparent dream. You have the light or the projector for the seeming movie going on, like this. Veti Loka Maheshwaram, and knows me as the Maheshwara of all Loka. Loka is an interesting word also, because Loka means a field of experience, right? To look comes from same root, to experience, to see. So all the fields of experience, who's behind that? The projector behind the movie, the consciousness behind the experiences. And asammudaha, seeing this clearly, without any unclarity, right? I see it as it is, because sammudaha is going to mean that I'm seeing things in an unclear way. There's some sort of, the word not coming to my mind, the silly mind here, that I'm seeing it with some sort of bias, I'm seeing it with some sort of unclarity. I see the snake like this. Some delusion has to be there. So sees it clearly. Sahamartyeshu, even though that one is amongst the mortals, even though it's human amongst human. A jnani is not somebody they're living in some other place, the other people are living elsewhere. They're living in the world. So even though that one is amongst everybody else, that one is freed from all papa, and what's the number one papa? It's the ignorance, right? Avidya, due to avidya, kama, there's desire. Why does kama come from avidya? I'm seeing myself as something limited. I see the snake, fear comes, I want to take care of it. I see it clearly, what do I need to do? No problems there. I don't see myself clearly, I project myself as something else. Right? I fall asleep, I forget what I am, I project a dream. I think I'm in some other situation. I don't see myself as I am, I project something else through what's coming through the senses. Now I'm this person, this is my friend, this is my foe, this I like, this I don't like, this is good for me, this is not good for me, and I'm caught up in the whole story like that. So the base is avidya, right? Original sin. Christianity, really it means avidya. That's probably what it should mean. Because of that, everything else comes. So sarva papaiva muchyate, once avidya is gone, everything else is gone. Very interesting point, so just since this is coming to mind connected to this thing. This is, we discussed this in our Wednesday night Vedanta class, it was brought up, which is a very interesting thing like this. So I want to be free, I want moksha. So then what's pointed out is, okay, what is it you want really? Well, I don't want to cease being, right? So I don't want to cease being, so the teacher says, well, that's true because your nature is sat. It's pure existence, it won't go away. Okay, well, I want to be happy, right? Well, your nature is ananda, meaning it's not part of this oscillation of joy, sorrow. It's just beyond that, meaning so it's pure joy because you like the joy. It's not caught up in that. So you're pure joy, not limited to this thing. Very good. But I also want to be aware. I want to don't want to be, you know, to become some insentient thing. I want to know. We're curious. I want to know things. Yes, because your nature is not knowingness itself, consciousness. So satchidananda. Not three aspects, but they just negate these things that I want to be, I want to know, I want to be happy. These limitations I have, I feel that I'm limited in those. You're not limited in those. So that's why satchidananda is really more than attributes, points that you're beyond these limitations. Now the important point here is, after this introduction, people are striving to become happy. They want ananda, right? I do things in order to be happy. Very good. People are doing things because they don't want to die. Let me do things so I can live longer, extend my life. And let me believe there's an afterlife, so I'll go to heaven, I'll continue being, right? So I want to continue to be. So these two people are putting effort into. But how many are putting effort to remove avidya, ignorance about who I am? Now the issue here is this. When I remove avidya, it's buy one, get two free. Meaning I know satchidananda, you get the whole package. Satchidananda, you're free, you're the consciousness. But if you just go after the other ones, you never get to the base because the avidya remains. So the thing is, people are going after those, but they don't get to the bottom of it. Somebody understands, they know they're not limited, so they know I'm ananda surupa, I'm not limited. They know I'm pure existence, I will always be. So this is the issue, sarva papai pramuchyate. He said, asammudaha, right? Aja, and who knows me, veti. So here very clearly Shri Krishna is saying, you need to know, then you'll be beyond these limitations. Something else is not going to take you beyond the limitations. This point is so important like this, that's the essence. So that's why, jnana, we want to know. So even though Shri Krishna is giving the introduction about the Ishvara Vibhuti, he doesn't mince on pointing, look, this is what's really important. This is to help you to know that. You go to some sort of science class, and the teacher's giving you some formulas, and you calculate in this way, in order to help you to understand the essence of the science we're looking into. It's not the end in itself like this. So, Now Shri Krishna will start pointing out how everything manifests from him. Okay, in the next verses. These two go together, it's one sentence, the next two verses. Buddhir jnanam asammoha kshama satyam damashamaha sukam dukkham bhavo bhavaha bhayam cha bhayam eva cha ahimsa samatha tushtihi tapodanam yasho yashaha bhavanti bhava bhutanam matta eva prithak vidhaha. Intelligence, knowledge, non-delusion, patience, truthfulness, sense control, mind control, pleasure, pain, birth, death, fear, fearlessness, non-violence, equanimity, contentment, austerity, generosity, fame, and ill fame, all these different dispositions are born, of beings are born out of me alone. So Shri Krishna, to point out, he is the cause of everything, everything coming from him, is going to point out both the external world and internal world, right? I'm the one who created this wonderful, you know, small computer, some sort of computer machine, meaning the hardware and the software. If I created the whole thing. So both the internal subtle world, which is, you know, subtle world, main part of subtle world is the mind, and also the external world. So here talking about the internal world, the mind. So all these things are coming from him. Buddhihi, right? Buddhihi, the very nice Adiguru Shankara says about the ability to reveal subtle things. That's the intellect. Because we discuss things, the intellect, more and more subtle things, whatever field you study, you look into, the more subtle points you understand, that's the buddhi, the intellect. Right? So buddhi, jnanam is to know, knowledge. I know something, the knowledge is born, right? I didn't know before, right? The Satchidananda, oh, the Brahman has three aspects. Oh, now I understand, it's not different aspects, it's just because I'm looking from limited things, it's unlimited in all of these. Okay, no, some knowledge is born. Now the thing is, he says the knowledge comes from me. I'm Sarvajna, Ishvara Sarvajna, all the knowledge is within him. So when it manifests in me, it just manifests in me, but it was already there within him. So the source is Ishvara. Now the instrument to know also comes from Ishvara. So I know something, I know. Oh, the fact that I can know, that's Ishvara Vibhuti, not my Vibhuti, not my glory, Ishvara's glory. And this knowledge is amazing. Wow, I didn't know this, right? Yes, that knowledge itself is also Ishvara. Isn't that amazing? So who am I? What am I? Yeah, just some manifestation of that. Because I want to see everything is manifestation of that. So am I not also, right? I am too. I, the individual. So we have buddhi, jnanam, asammohaha, not being deluded, right? So, to meaning using my viveka. I want, when I look into something and know it, I don't jump to conclusions. I don't have biases, right? I see things as they are. I look into them as they are. Looking into it closely, right? For science, how important it is. Things in world, in daily life also, I want to look at them properly. And of course here, in this vichara, how important it is. Because we jump to conclusions. I come from certain religion, I have certain beliefs, I take that as sacrosanct, and it helped, not that it didn't help me, gave some sort of security and some sort of vision there's something greater than this limited life, very good. But I hold on to that instead of looking even further. Let me really look into it. I hold on to sentiments. So all these things have to really viveka, really to look at it very clearly. Okay, so sammoha, that also comes from Ishvara. And then kshama, forbearance. Very nice explanation given, Swami Dayananji gives. What happens is something comes to me. Meaning comes, I see, I hear like this. This is, the forbearance means I don't internalize it. You said something harsh to me, you said and I heard, but it didn't sink deep within me. Yeah, maybe I listen, okay, maybe I could do a little better at that, or maybe I understand you were just upset, so, you know, we'll let it pass like this, say some nice words, so the person gets, you know, friendship stays, the person calms down a little, but the moment I internalize it, now it'll start, you know, percolating inside, how they say that to me, right? Some anger is starting to build up, or some frustration or whatever. So the forbearance means it comes in, it doesn't seep deep within me. Then I forbear it, it stays outside, like that. So that's kshama, forbearance. And satyam, here in this context, honesty. Adiguru Shankara says, as I see, as I hear, as I experience, that is what I'm going to say. I'm not going to, you know, to twist the things, say as they are, like this. So he took it as rujutvam, straightforwardness. He took it like this in his commentary. And again, things like this, they're helping, when I act in that way, it helps me keep mind in line that the Ishvara can, that I'm more in line with Ishvara, Dharma, with, when I'm in line with that, then easier for me to, since I'm in line with that, easier to see the truth behind it. When I twist things, then it's harder for me because now I'm dealing with a twisty, curvy mind like this. So this is why it's also important. Then Dhamma and Shama. So Shama is controlling the control of the mind, not just according to the mind's whims. I'm not living according to that. I keep the mind calm without getting caught up in so much stuff. The Dhamma is with the senses, external expression. So if I don't have Shama, I need Dhamma because there is, you know, something, some very tasty food. Okay, I take a little bit, but if I keep eating just food because it's tasty, not because it's good for me, my mind is going, the senses aren't under control. They're the boss instead of me being the boss, so I need to learn to control them. If the mind is already in controlled balance, I'm not going to need to because it'll automatically be like that. I already have that control. So that's an interesting point about those two. Swami Dayananji, he says about the Shama, that I don't go by useless or harmful ideas in the mind. I don't, you know, just like you're driving, you're staying in your lane, you're doing it carefully, not too fast, being aware of things around, right? Not some youngster just got their license and driving around who knows how, because it's fun. So this way, I understand those, so I don't follow those types of thoughts. They're interesting, like this. So Dhammaha Shammaha. Sukham dukkham, I'm happy, comes from Ishvara. Why? Because the moment I'm happy, I'm joyful, meaning who am I at that time? I forget my individuality. So it's coming because from the core of my being, it's really coming from there. I attribute it to something, but really just that the mind dropped the limited ideas. Then dukkham comes, sorrow comes. Sorrow is also coming from Ishvara. Oh, why would God want you to be unhappy? Well, if God wants you to be happy or unhappy, then God has will and God has some desire. It's not like that. I do something, and the karma palai sukha or dukkha. So I do something that causes some trouble somehow, something negative, so some dukkha later comes to me. So it's karma pala. Now, the whole law of karma is manifestation of Ishvara. Look, perfect righteousness as it's supposed to be. So dukkha comes, that's also manifestation of Ishvara, because it's karma karma pala. Okay, like this. So sukham dukkham bhavo bhavaha. something coming into being, born, and being destroyed. So anything comes into being comes from Ishvara, right? Anything like this, some man-made or not man-made, no, that's natural, so it came from God. This is human-made, so that didn't come from God. But where did the human come from? Where did the human's mind come from? The human ability come from? So that also comes from Ishvara. In this one poem, any parent should read it, the poem by Khalil Gibran about my children, about your children, he says. He doesn't say my, he says your children, that they come through you, right? My child. You know? Nature brings the child comes because of their karma, their wanting to live their life and everything. So that also I have to remember that. Anything came into being, it's from the God. Anything stops to come into being, also from the God. Like this. Like a neighbor up the street. Then his father was in his 80s. Full of energy, would walk and garden and everything. Last year of his life, kind of, okay, enough gardening. He got sick, whatever, some sort of cancer, something, and passed away. So then when I spoke to him, yeah, my father went back to the, you know, went back to the God. Oh, how nice. What a nice way to see it, like this. Comes from there, goes back to there. So anything comes, it's from there, goes back to there. Because actually, this is one good way to look at it. We say the person died, and then maybe, I hope they went to the heaven. Maybe I'll meet them in the heaven or other life like this. Better to see they came from the God, they went back to the God, because God manifestation. That's it. Because otherwise I'm still holding on to the limited aspect. The limited aspect is Ishvara's vibhuti. Ishvara's glory is that limited one. It's the wave of Ishvara. So then I'll see the God behind instead of I'm still holding on to the attributes of the manifestation. So when I remember that person, oh yes, yes, the God manifested as that, and went back to the God unmanifest, went back to the God. That's it. What a wonderful way to look at it, like this. So bhavo and bhavaha, bhayam abhayam, fear and non-fear also. So why does fear arise? I, as this limited one, am threatened in some way, right? I feel threatened. Now what happens is, what is this limited one? It's Ishvara manifest, right? The reflected consciousness. Remember, this is Chidabhasa, the intellect or mind. It's a very, very fine material, so the consciousness reflects in it. Now, so that's the consciousness. Now I identify with that upadhi, with the limited one. And I'm afraid of something. What is the source of this mind, this intellect? It's the Ishvara. So because it identifies with the limited one, it's afraid. Without being conscious being, will you be afraid? Right? Have you ever seen a stone being afraid? There's a stone in the quarry. They're about to break it up and, you know, make gravel out of it and build a house. Oh, that big hammer is coming, what's gonna happen to me? It can't be afraid. You have to be a conscious being to be afraid. To be a conscious being, you have to reflect the consciousness of the God, of the infinite. So bhayam and abhayam, fearlessness, because I know that I'm that conscious being, I'm not this limited one. So both of them come because of Ishvara. This is one thing, is the positive things come up like this, then I see I'm more humble because I see it's not me, it's because of Ishvara this thing has come. I'm successful at this, Ishvara's glory, like that. The negative one comes, yes, it's there because of Ishvara. Why? Because karma pala, right? Not that the God wanted me to suffer, my previous actions brought this, so it's manifestation Ishvara karma pala. The fact that I can experience this means I'm a conscious being, means it's because of Ishvara. So everything internal also, Ishvara. Ishvara is like this. Okay. Ahimsa. Ahimsa is very much manifestation of Ishvara, because ahimsa, I don't want to hurt something else, somebody else, because I see that I'm a conscious being, they're a conscious being too. So I don't want to be hurt because I'm a conscious being and I know what it feels like. So I feel, at least to some extent, one with them. Same consciousness here as in there, so I don't want to hurt that one. So ahimsa, samatha, the equilibrium, right? Like this. So that's also Ishvara's glory, that the mind can, that I can get to a level like that, that the mind is balanced, right? And tushti, contentment, okay? So this comes from when the mind is content. This means that the mind is sattva pradhana now. Sattva means that sattva, rajas, tamas, their manifestation of maya, trigunatmika maya. And what is behind maya? Ishvara is behind maya. So, tushtihi, now manifestation of Ishvara. Anything you can take like this, the gunas, right? It's going to be then sources that. Tapaha, I do tapas. The fact that I want to get to some to the truth, something deeper, that desire is because the Ishvara are percolating in my mind, that I feel this limited one, I want to go beyond to what I'm beyond this. So Ishvara manifests. And then the fact that I do tapas and tapas has a result. Again, karma, karma pala, cause effect. So this is going to be Ishvara too. So tapaha, dhanam, giving. And later on, we'll be discussing it in some later chapters about different qualities. If I don't remember correctly, we'll say one can give up most worldly activities, but tapas, dhanam, and there are three. Tapas, dhanam, one other there. We'll discuss these qualities not to give up. Right? So dhanam, I give according to my ability, and I give to the proper person, the proper place, and the proper manner. All this is dhanam, charity. I give, and then I have the plaque on the wall because I gave $1,000, and put the plaque. Right? I give and I feel very bad. Or I give in the wrong place, wrong time, wrong people, like this. So dhanam in this way. Yashaha, ayashaha, fame and ill fame. As you said earlier, the manifestation as fame and ill fame. And those will be also, in my mind, I'm going to see the fame. So it's, he says it takes as something mental, just like Dhamma. Dhamma is sense control, but it starts in the mind. So you're also Yashaha, I see, wow, this person amazing, how hard they worked at that. What a wonderful thing that they could put all their time and energy into being so great in this field. Right? Or how much trouble this person is given. Wow, this ill fame. So I see it in my mind. And so these are also manifestations of Ishvara himself. When you see somebody does something so horrific, how can that be somebody do like this, right? Also it's going to be Ishvara's manifestation, even that. In the Rudram, those who know, or chant Rudram there, such a wonderful prayer that also is giving all sorts of different dacoits and thieves and murders, also that is manifestation of Rudra. Right? Not just to see as the positive, but everything. See this and that manifestation of Ishvara. Because otherwise, the God is in just the good, then not in the negative, now the God is limited. Of course, in the positive, it's going to be manifest much clearer, and I want that to manifest in myself because then I'm more in line with Ishvara and easier for me, I'll live more peacefully and I can look into this. Where the negative isn't what I strive for, but I have to see Ishvara as there too, manifest there too. Okay. So we have yashaha and ayashaha. Then bhavanti bhavaha bhutanam. These all manifest within the beings, so specifically within humans here, right? Mataha eva pritagvidhaha. They all manifest for me in various ways, because each person has the different swabhava, different nature. They manifest differently in each and every person, but they're manifesting, but they're all coming from me. So to see all the different dispositions, all the different possible mental, emotional factors that come up, that's all coming from the same source. That's saying, remember, that's from me. So the different things come to my mind in this way, seeing that they're coming from that same source, not from just from me. It's the waves are coming from the ocean. Thought waves coming then from thought ocean. There's actually one very interesting thing. When we try to see that I as an individual, I as the consciousness, I as the individual, I'm not separate from the universal. When I take the physical body, it's not very hard because the physical material comes in, right? And it's part of the whole physical universe, not very difficult. When you go to pranamaya kosha, to prana, yes, the energy in me is part of the universal energy. Also not too hard. Life in me, there's life in everything. When you get to the mind, that's where it starts to be a little harder to see. Because you say, yes, my mind is manifestation, wave within the universal mind. There it's a little harder because not as obvious. But the mind is, first of all, it's not something I created, right? Something that's a universal principle. So first of all, the instrument itself is a universal instrument. Just like anything that manifests in one place and manifests other, meaning it's some universal principle that is manifesting. Gravity is happening everywhere. Solar systems are happening everywhere. So it's a universal manifestation. That's one thing. Then what I think, etc., things are fed to me by family, by school, by media. So all the thoughts are put in also. So the thing is, the instrument I didn't create, it's there. What's being fed in also is coming from the whole world and everything through the senses. So you can't really see it as something separate. My mind is separate like this. So although it's subtler, we can also see that it's a wave in the universal mind, and so it's a manifestation of the universal, like this. So the internal world taken care, not separate from the Ishvara, and next week then we'll start taking care of the external world too. For now, Ishvara is just internal. We'll take care of Ishvara external next time. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. So have a good week, and then we'll continue next time. Mm-hmm.